Kof Beis Tammuz, Thursday the 5th of July, Rabbi Chase Taub. What is a true zealot?
Okay. Just spilled. We get a little. We'll clear it up. Yeah, this is the camera, but don't stare right at it, right? And this is the phone. Okay. Good morning. Here's an oldie but a goodie. You could chime in with the punchline if you know it. So a guy goes to the Rav and he says, Rabbi, I really, really, really want to be a kohen. Could you make me a kohen? And the Rav says, no, I'm sorry. Can't be done. I can't make you a kohen. The guy says, Rabbi, it's very important to me. I would appreciate it. I would make a significant donation to the shul if you could make me a kohen. Rabbi says, I'm sorry. I can't make you a kohen. The guy says, Rabbi, I know about that building you're trying to build. I'll give you the money for the whole building. Just make me a kohen. Rabbi says, why? Why is it so important to you to be a kohen? And he says, come on, you can say it. Because my father was a kohen, and his father was a kohen, and his father was a kohen. And therefore, I also would like to be a kohen. Okay, excellent. And now, you can all laugh. Ha 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 ha. You want to hear a joke backwards? No. Start laughing. You get it? You want to hear a joke about a tailor? No? Okay, suit yourself.
Oh. David.
You like these? This is American humor, that's why you don't get it. It's actually not funny, but I'll pretend it's a cultural difference and then protect myself from feeling ashamed for telling non-funny jokes. So, I got one good guy in the audience. This is it. That's all I need. That's all. Baruch Hashem. Okay. So, Pinchas, Ben Elazar, Ben Aaron, HaKohen. Yeah. What's the story with Pinchas? So, this week's Parsha, Parshas Pinchas, starts off, it tells us, Yidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemer, Hashem says to Moshe, saying, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron ha-Kohen, Heishiv eschamasim eyal b'nei Yisrael, he took away my anger from the Jewish people, Bekanei eskinosi b'seicham, when he was zealous for me among them. Says Rashi on this pasuk, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron akoy. Lefi shahoyu ashvatim mevazim esay. What's bothering Rashi? What's Rashi answering? We know Pinchas's lineage not only from Sefer Shmos when we got the lineage of the Jewish people, but we got it just in the previous Parsha, Parsha's Balak, at the end of Balak. And it told us right there, just a few psukim before this Parsha, exactly the same information. So we already know Pinchas's family tree. And now it's being repeated again right here. And Rashi is explaining to us why it's coming up again. So Rashi explains, yes, we know Pinchas' lineage. We know his pedigree. But there's a reason in this context, after the execution of Zimri, why the pedigree is mentioned again. Lefisha hoyu ashvatim mevazim esay. Because the tribes, that means the Jewish people, were mocking him, they were disparaging him. He had just committed an act of heroism, which God rewarded and gave him the kohuna, gave him priesthood because of, and the tribes of Israel were mocking and disparaging. Harisim ben Tuti Zed, do you see this one, who is the descendant of, this is a reference to Yisroi, Shepitim avi imai, that his maternal grandfather, his mother's father, Yisrael, would fatten agolim, calves, kalbalach, laveda zara, for foreign gods. Vaharag, and he killed Nasi, Shevet Yisrael, the prince of a tribe. Lefichach, therefore, Bo HaKosov, the Kosov, the Pasuk, the Torah comes along, V'yachsu Achar Aron, and it attributes his Yichus to Aron. Okay. So a few questions. First of all questions about Rashi. First of all, why does Rashi say, Lefisha Hoyo Ashvatim Evazim Esay, that the tribes, meaning Klal Yisrael. I understand if Shimei, Zimri was the Nasi of Shimei, and those who were involved in the Maise with the women from Midian were from Shimei. So I understand if the tribe of Shimei has a bone to pick with Pinchas. But all of the Shvatim, to the contrary, they should have been very thankful to him, because Shimon, that tribe is the one who's causing problems for everyone, causing Amagefa. There was divine retribution. It was very quick retribution. There was a plague, and Pinchas removed the plague. So maybe Shimon would have a grudge, maybe that tribe, but the Shvatim, all of the Jewish people, were mocking Pinchas at that moment. Why does Rashi say all of the Shvatim were mocking Pinchas? That's one question. Another question. If they wanted to mock him for being the descendant of Yisrael, who we know was a Ger Tzedek, but if they want to bring the skeletons out of the closet, and they want to drudge up family history, and they want to talk about his interesting past, what's with this very unusual and very unique criticism that he fattened calves for the slaughter to idolatrous offerings? Fattening calves? That's what was so wrong? It wasn't about fattening calves, it was about Aveda Zora. Say he's descended from an Aveda Zora. I mean, pick the right Lashon Hara already, will you? If you want to put a guy down, put him down for the big Aveda, the Aveda Zora. Not that he fattened calves. What's even Shaykh, the fattening calves? The third question. When Rashi comes and explains the Yichus here of Pinchas, when he says, Lefichach, therefore, he says that the Torah comes and attributes lineage Achar Aharon. Aharon. Well, there's two things that are funny about that. First of all, the Torah doesn't just trace Pinchas' lineage to Aharon. It traces it to Elazar, and through Elazar to Aharon. Rashi makes no mention of Elazar, he only mentions Aharon. Pinchas is only related to Aharon through Elazar. And that's what the verse says. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharon. And yet, Rashi only mentions the Yichus to Aharon, not to Elazar. Secondly, this is like question 3b. Following so far? 3a is why? Well, let's just make sure we... First question is, why does Rashi say all the Shvatim? Why not only Shimon? Why weren't they grateful to him? Second question is, why this very specific and peculiar insult when they said that he fattened calves? Third question is, the Yichus of Pinchas in the verse is the son of Aaron, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKoin. And Rashi only mentions that he's the son of the grandson of Aaron. He doesn't mention at all that he's the son of Elazar. That's 3a. And the 3b is when it mentions Aaron, when Rashi mentions Aaron, he doesn't say Aaron HaKoin. In the verse it says Aaron HaKoin. And Rashi only says Aaron, not Aaron HaKoin. In other words, if you're attributing, you say that he comes from this Yichus, from a former Oved of Erezorah. We want to say, no, he comes from a Choshev Yichus, he comes from the Kohuna. But then it doesn't even mention Koin. The Pasuk says Koin, but Rashi just says Aaron, that he's related to Aaron. Doesn't say Aaron HaKoin. That's 3b. And a fourth question, give a fourth question. What bechlal is the whole taina here? What happened? Let's just set up the story again. Let's just remind ourselves. Balak hired Bilam to curse the Jews. It didn't work. Okay, didn't work. By the way, somebody pointed out to me, a friend of mine, back in New York, that today, most hacking, like hacking into a computer system, is not like it used to be. Hackers used to figure out the code. They used to figure out their password or the password of the, you know, of a corporation or of a bank, and they would break in through figuring it out. And basically now the software that there is for creating codes is so strong, it's really not possible nowadays. I mean, mathematically, it's just the possibility or the probability of actually cracking the code is so minimal. That's not what hackers do anymore. That's a waste of time. So, but the hackers still hack. How do they hack now? They don't try to figure out the code. The new method is social engineering. You find a human weakness and get a guy to give you the code. Right? Like find a guy who works for the corporation and find out, you know, where he's, you know, what he's using to sign in on his personal social media, you know, and then figure out that that's the same thing that he, because he's the IT guy for the Bank of America, and then you basically they use social engineering, phishing techniques, whatever, you know, they try to get the information from you. Because it's a lot easier to get a human to slip up than it is to mathematically figure out all these different combinations. So somebody who I know who works in the computer industry, so he says to me, Balak hired Bilam to defeat the Jews. He knew he couldn't do it militarily. So he says, we're going to do it, we have a different method. We're going to hack into the system, and we're going to mess with their relationship with Hashem. And that's what Bilam tried to do, try to hack into the system. But he couldn't crack the code, because when he would try to curse them, he'd end up blessing them. So after that didn't work, he said, fine, forget it. I can't crack the code, but I can use social engineering. I can prey upon human weaknesses, and I'll get them to give the code away to me. I'll get them to interrupt and interfere with their own relationship with Hashem. And that's when Bilam said to Balak and Eitzah, he said, Elakeim shel Yisrael, that the Jewish God, Sein Ezimo, he despises lewdness, so let's just find their human weakness and prey upon that, and they themselves will interrupt their relationship with Hashem and remove the divine protection from them. And that's exactly what they did. Balak and Bilam. So this whole, the background of this story is that Bilam came up with this plot. He was using the women of Midian to tempt and to lure away Jewish men. And it was like a crisis. And so they made Bote Dinim, Meshurabeinu made courts, and they were trying these people for this crime. In the midst of this, the Nasi of Shimon, Zimri, he gets up and he starts flouting the whole thing. He starts making a joke out of it and publicly cohabiting with this princess of Midian. So, and then there was a plague. And then Pinchas took action and he executed Zimri and it removed the plague. Okay, so here's question number four about this Rashi. Pinchas acted upon a legal principle known as Haboyel Rames Kanayim Poigimbay. It's a very specific legal principle, and there are many different criteria for how this principle is invoked. First of all, it's a halacha ve'inoidin kein. If you go to Beis Din and you ask them, they won't tell you that you could do this. And Pinchas was acting upon this principle. Now, let's say that the people didn't even know about this concept. They didn't know what Pinchas was doing. So in that case, call him a murderer. Because from their perspective, that's what he did. But it doesn't say they called him a murderer. They called him a descendant of Yisrael. Or, from the other side, if you want to say they did know Haboyel Rames Kanayim Poigimbay, and they knew about all the details and all the stipulations under which that legal principle was invoked. But for some reason they thought that Pinchas didn't qualify. Like, they didn't think he was a real Kanoi. Because it has to be someone who's jealous for the honor of Hashem. Maybe they thought he has ulterior motives. So say that. Say you have ulterior motives. Don't make fun of his lineage. So that's question four. Why Bechlau was that the thing they were saying? Either say you're a murderer, because from their perspective they didn't know about Kanoi and Poigimbay. Or say you have ulterior motives. If they did know about Kanoi and Poigimbay and didn't think that he lived up to the criteria. But don't make fun of him that he's descended from Yisrael. Okay, so we have four questions about Rashi, yeah? Why all the Shvatim are Mevaza Pinchas? Why they Mevaza him about a very specific insult that Yisrael was fattening calves to Aveda Zora? Why not just say the big Aveda, the Aveda Zora itself? Three, why the Yichus is to Aaron and makes no mention, in the Pasuk it does mention Elazar and Aaron, but in Rashi it only mentions Aaron. And then also, why when Rashi mentions Aaron, he only calls him Aaron. He doesn't call him with a title. Doesn't call him Hakayin. And the fourth question is, Bechlau, why are they talking about his Yichus? That's the Taina? That's what they're so upset about? Okay, fine. Everyone, so far so good? You know about the guy jumped off a skyscraper and he fell by the window of the executive office. And the guy, seeing him fall, says, "Are you okay?" And the fallen guy said, "So far, so good." So far, so good? Okay. So here's the deal. The Jewish people, when they saw what Pinchas did, Here's what happened. There was a need to defend the honor of the Jewish people and the honor of Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Or at least that need was felt. Because if Pinchas was right, if he was right, so here's the question. Yeah, you might have been right, but how come you're the only guy who acted on it? If we all knew Kanayim Poigimbay, which we did because Moshe Rabbeinu taught it. And Moshe Rabbeinu himself knew Kanayim Poigimbay because, again, Moshe Rabbeinu taught it. But he's the only one who did it. So they were reasoning, you know, we all knew about this as a concept, we all knew about it as a principle, but when it actually came to do it, a little deliberation, a little hesitation. You're talking about a human life. You're the only guy who jumped on it so fast. Something's funny about you. Why did you jump on it so fast without hesitation?
It was on the Cohen's Enoch. Because it was on the Cohen's Enoch. So it was a Cohen.
He was a, so therefore?
Zriza name.
Oh, Zrizas. Okay, there were other Kehanim. There's plenty of other Kehanim. Zrizas is all Kehanim. They were. I'm not asking why he was the one who jumped on it. I'm asking you the mindset of everybody else in Klal Yisrael who didn't jump on it like he did. What are they thinking? What are, they have to answer for the fact that nobody else did it. So they came up with it. Well, they all had the instruction from Moshe Rabbeinu. They had all learned it from Moshe Rabbeinu, but he was the only one who did it. Moshe Rabbeinu told him, Ilevi Pravanka, after he asked, Kanoyim Poigam, but anybody could have said, Kanoyim Poigam, they'd all learned that. I'm not asking why they didn't. I'm asking why, how the people at that time were able to explain away the fact that they didn't. Not why Pinchas did. What did they explain why they didn't?
Because Moshe didn't do it now, and he had done it during the Egel time. So therefore...
Imagine yourself, you're there. You're in the Midbar. You're watching this crisis. Pinchas jumps on it. He kills Zimri. Hashem says, you did a good thing, Pinchas. You stopped the plague. And now every single person has to answer. Why didn't I do what he did? So they came up with a theory. They started playing amateur psychologist. And they said like this. You want to know why I didn't do it, and you didn't do it, and he didn't do it? The only guy who did it was Pinchas. I'll tell you why. Because there's something not right about him. See, a normal person, even if he knows there's a concept called Habayel Aramas Kanayim Paganbay, a normal person isn't eager to shed blood. And even when he knows there's a situation where Halacha allows for it, he hesitates. He pauses. Because it's not something that he wants to do. But this guy acted so fast. Here's what I'm theorizing. This is what everyone was theorizing. He's got a naturally cruel streak to him. He's got a bloodlust. And he's been biding his time and waiting for the opportunity to murder with impunity. And he found it, and that's why he was the one who jumped on it before anybody else. And I'll tell you how I know he has a cruel streak. Because he inherited it from his maternal grandfather, who used to fatten calves for slaughter. Not the Aveda Zora of it. It's the cruelty of doing something outwardly kind, taking care of this defenseless animal, but only to turn on them, to murder them, to fatten them up only for your own benefit, not for theirs. So they said he inherited that cruel streak, and that's why all the Shvatim were saying it. Because it wasn't that Shimon had a grudge. This was not about Shimon's grudge. This was about the covet of Klal Yisrael. They had to answer for themselves what's their excuse, why they didn't act, why nobody else acted. And this was the theory they came up with. Only he acted because he was waiting to murder for ever since he was born. He was born with that teva, and then the minute, the second that he had an opportunity to murder within the protection of the law, he jumped on it. So that's why it was all the Shvatim who were mocking him, not just Shimei, because it had nothing to do with their grudge about him murdering Zimri. It wasn't about who he murdered. It was about them answering and explaining their own guilt, why they didn't. And everyone had equally that same guilt. This is why they specifically they zeroed in on that very peculiar criticism. You're descended from the one who fattened the calves for slaughter, because that's what they were tracing his cruel streak to. That was the illustration of cruelty. And I'll skip question 3A and B for a second and go to question 4 about why Bechlau were they talking about Yichus, because this was the whole amateur psychological theory they were coming up with. You're the only guy who jumped on it because you are different than us. You have a cruel streak. You have a midah ra'a that we don't have. And that's why you did it. And that's why we didn't. So comes Hashem and says, you guys are wrong. Nice theory, but you're totally wrong. It's not correct. Let me tell you who this Pinchas is. He's Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharonakai. Now, what's Negeya here? Rashi tells us, not that he's a ben Elazar, not that he's a Kohen. It's not about the Yichus here. It's not that they were making fun of his Yichus and then the Eibishter comes in and says he has a Choshev Yichus. That's irrelevant. They were saying he's descended from a cruel person. Hashem says, no, he's descended from the most compassionate person. You know who that is? Aaron. And that's why Rashi doesn't even say Aaron a Kohen. Because when it's talking about Aaron's compassion, it has nothing to do with Aaron as Kohen or Kohen Gadol. It has to do with Aaron as Aaron. Who was Aaron? Oyevet Habriyas HaMekarvin L'Torah, like Hillel says. Be of the Talmid of Shal Aaron. Aaron was a lover of Jews. It is known. The reason why there was a greater mourning period for Aaron than for Moshe is because Moshe is Emes. He was not a diplomat. Aaron was a diplomat. When two people were fighting, a husband and wife, a brother and a sister, or business partners, or friends, whoever it might be, and Aaron was the one who could always make peace because he would say, you know, the person you're fighting with, he really wants to apologize, but he's so embarrassed he can't face you. And then we find the other person, you know, he really wants to apologize, so embarrassed he can't face you. And then they would see each other and they would say, oh, Nebuch, he's a broken man. He really feels bad that he's fighting with me. You know what? It's okay, you know. And then that's how he engineered all these peace treaties. But the reason he did it is because Aaron was Poshet, a compassionate and loving person who cared for everybody. And that was just who he was. That was Aaron. And Pinchas inherited that compassion. And he saw people dying. He saw a plague. He saw people suffering. And he couldn't abide by that. He couldn't stand watching that, witnessing that human suffering. And he had to stop it. And he did the most difficult thing in the world for a compassionate person to do. He did something not only he didn't relish, but that was against his nature. He took a life. Actually, he took two lives. And that was not his nature. It was not something he wanted to do. But his compassion for the Klal, who were in crisis, and he was watching the devastation unfold. His compassion moved him, and he took decisive action. So one of the things we learn about this is that a real kanoi, a real zealot, is not someone who enjoys gvura, judgment, din, severity. A real kanoi is a lover of the Jewish people. And this is such an important point that Hashem adds a pasuk in the Torah just to clarify. Because if Hashem wouldn't have made sure that we knew that Pinchas is a descendant of Aaron and inherited his Zaydi's compassion and love, then we would think, like everybody else, that a zealot could just be somebody who has a natural proclivity to harshness, but, you know, as long as he channels it in a kosher way, so it's fine. No, that's not a zealot. A zealot is somebody who has the opposite of a natural proclivity to harshness. He has a natural proclivity to kindness. It makes him, it pains him to do anything harsh, and yet, in order to do kindness, he'll even have to do it in a harsh way when that's what's called for. But a real zealot is the most gentle, kind, loving, compassionate person. Not the person who is waiting for an opportunity to be a jerk, b'rishus ha-Torah. Let me add another point here, which is also quite pertinent in our days. Let's contrast Pinchas with Zimri. So I was saying that Pinchas did an act of severity, gvura, but his entire kavana was love, was chesed. Zimri is the exact opposite. Zimri committed an act of love, free love. All you need is love. I want to love who I love. You want to interfere? This is who I love. So openly, his act was one of love. But really, what was he doing? An act of destruction. He was ruining his people spiritually and also physically. So it was an act of cruelty. So Pinchas is outwardly cruel, but inwardly compassionate and loving. Zimri is outwardly loving, compassionate, tolerant, but inwardly terribly cruel. This is another very important lesson for our times. In our times, there's great confusion. Rampant confusion. And I don't have to get specific and into details. Anyone who knows what's going on in the world today understands that people today want compassion. They want love. They don't like severity. They don't like restriction. They want tolerance and openness. And I want to tell you something. It's not inherently a bad thing. Torah is darkei noyam and darkei shalom. But it has to be true compassion. Has to be true love. You can have an act which outwardly looks like it's loving, but at its core is actually cruel and destructive. And doesn't help anyone. Even the people you're purporting to have compassion for. There are other acts that appear to be intolerant and judgmental and severe, but their entire motivation is a deep regard and compassion for your fellow. Today we have Zimri and we have Pinchas. And society thinks they want a Zimri, but they're really looking for a Pinchas. And we have to explain to them that this which is in a shell of Gvura, which takes on an outward appearance of Gvura, is actually, at its core, the ultimate chesed and love. Society today wants love and compassion. Let's show them true love and compassion. When you direct people toward their purpose in life, instead of fighting against the grain, instead of going against how Hashem designed the Bria, when we go with the energy that's in the universe by following the divine plan as outlined in Torah, which is the blueprint for creation, that is the greatest kindness we can do for ourselves and for each other. So just like Pinchas is traced in his lineage to Aaron, because Aaron is the ultimate lover of his fellow, Zimri is traced in his lineage to Shimei. Who is Shimei? What does Yankiv Avinu tell Shimei? Shimei wiped out, he and his brother Levi wiped out the entire town of Shechem. And Yankiv Avinu, in his parting words to Shimon and Levi, he says, Orur Apom. Cursed is their anger. He didn't want to Chas V'Shalom curse them, Chas V'Shalom, but he did curse their anger. He said, you guys are hotheads. Zimri had the cruel streak. Zimri, the one who was all for love and openness and tolerance and I'm going to love who I want to love, and he was the one with the cruel streak. Pinchas, who had to do the most severe action that a human being could ever do, which is to take a life, he was the one with the compassionate streak. So it's very important for us today not to confuse issues. We stand for love. We stand for compassion. We stand for tolerance. But the way to do that is not by breaking down boundaries and borders and standards. That's an act of cruelty. And when we'll live in accordance with the divine plan and promote living in accordance with the divine plan, that is the greatest chesed that we can do for each other.